Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation Friday, open mic to Mike. Used to be known as Rock and Roll Friday, but I'm too apathetic to even pick rock and roll. So we're playing Cannonball Adderley. Is this Hippadelphia? Thanks for giving me the cliff notes. See, I was thinking about apathy today, and I believe my audience has become apathetic. I believe America has become apathetic. In fact, I know America's apathetic. We're ripe for a takeover. The leadership is so corrupt and so bad that their ratings are the lowest in history. Bush is the lowest in history, or close to it, and Congress is half of his. So here's a question for you. Do you agree with me that Obama is to authentic black leadership as elevator music is to authentic jazz? Do you agree with me that McCain is to true conservatism as Bush is to coherence? Do you agree with me that the leprechaun is to authentic journalism what Daniel Steele is to real literature? Do you agree with me that Barbara Boxer is to a real senator as much as a packaged bagel is to a hot roll? Well, I guess they don't even know what I'm talking about. Play more jazz, that's all. I'll sell this on eBay. It's called Apathy Prep, my handwriting on it. Anyone want to buy it? Apathy Prep by Michael Savage. Going, going, gone. 5 cents. Do I hear five? Do I hear 6 cents? Six. I got six in the back. Six. Do I hear 7 cents? Question. Why are the great days of great jazz over? There's a political point to all this, so bear with me. Can anyone still perform like these great jazz artists? What made great jazz giants such as Coltrane, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Nat Cannonball Adderley, why can't they do it anymore? Tell me why they can't do it anymore. What happened? What was it about that era that men who came up the real hard way, obviously they had to fight the evils of America, and yet they were able to come up with a horn and blow people's ears out, and make people walk out saying, how did he do it? Why can't anyone do it anymore, despite all of the rhetoric about this and that and this and give me this and give me that? How come there's no Coltrane anymore, no Parker, no Adderley? Why are the jazz greats gone? Why can't anyone still perform like this? Well, I guess the answer is, why can't we get a presidential candidate worthy of the presidency? You're telling me Obama or McCain? I mean, clear the air. I don't care which side you're on. Are you telling me that Obama or McCain are up to the job of being a president? It's only because they're the only choices that you've chosen aside. You're telling me that a guy like the leprechaun is an authentic journalist? Or that Barbara Boxer is what a real senator should be like? So what do you want me to do here? I mean, I truly believe that America has entered a new phase of apathy. And it's not because the people themselves want to be apathetic. It is because the government media complex has designed apathy. They have created apathy. They've driven you into an apathetic state of mind, almost a paralysis. That is so they can continue to sell the country out lock, stock, and barrel. They can continue to roll you over a barrel by jacking your oil prices up and making you pay $5 a gallon, which is doubled in a year, without you going on a riot, without the truck drivers closing down bridges and tunnels. That is why they will let the pervs pervert the schools to distract you from what they're actually doing in Iraq. You want me to go on and on? I think it's all a conspiracy, frankly. And that leads me back really to ground zero here. What's left to talk about? If you're apathetic and you don't really react or care about most things on earth, how in the world can the political system be changed? If a corrupt congressman can call the U.S. military and reinstate charges against the Marine who was exonerated, and the man is not immediately taken out in an orange jumpsuit and handcuffs by federal marshals because the president says, that's outrageous, that's not happening, I'm the commander-in-chief. So what do you want the average person to do, I ask myself? Nothing. Can't do anything about it. So you saw the polls. Confidence in Congress at record low. America shows less confidence in all of the 15 of the American institutions tracked by the so-called Gallup poll. That includes schools, organized labor, and the military. But by the way, you have to read the whole poll from the leftists at Gallup to come to understand that the military has the most high degree of confidence of the American people. You have to read pages of data to understand that people have great faith in the military and that they have very low faith in Congress. But that shows you the government media complex and how these pollsters are part of the same schemata. Only banks and the criminal justice system, that means judges, have seen as precipitous a decline as the three branches of the federal government. So you have faith in nobody or anything. Of course, they didn't ask you if you have faith in talk show hosts. Had they asked you that, it might come out that 9 out of 10 people say, I listen to talk show hosts, and I believe in them. That they wouldn't ask you at the whatever it's called, Gallup. So there it is. Play jazz for a minute. You know, when all else fails, I play Coltrane. How about giving me impressions by John Coltrane? Let him hear what great music is. Okay. I'll play it for a second or two for the person who doesn't understand this music. It's hard to explain it. It's at the same time logical and paralogical. It's at the same time rational and irrational. It's at the same time genius and madness. It's at the same time agonizingly beautiful and agonizingly painful. In other words, it was created and performed by people who lived on the edge, for those who live on the edge. And because the medical establishment has taken away your edge with Prozac, you're no longer to live on the edge. You can't take the edge. Prozac has taken you off the edge. Prozac has taken the edge out of you. America's lost its edge. That's why we're declining as a nation. We've been drugged out of existence. America is the most overdrugged nation on earth. If I had the power, I would ban drugs for children of this nature to start with. And then I would severely restrict prescribing drugs for adults every time they have a quirk or a fear, drug them. Do you hear what I'm saying? Do you have any idea what I just said to you? Do you want me to bleed for your sins? Do you want me to take that spike and put it in my wrist every day on a cross? How many different ways do you want me to bleed to Sunday? Monday through Friday, 3 hours a day, you want me to bleed for your apathy? I'm not going to do it. You do it. This is your day. You make this show. Show me you're not apathetic. The phone number, one shot, 1-800-449-8255. Play it for 30 seconds, then I'll be right back. Savage Nation, we're talking about apathy. And it's why I'm playing jazz, authentic jazz that can't be created anymore. Because this level of genius doesn't exist. I'll name one field that it does exist in other than talk radio. Maybe in science or engineering. Maybe in some advances in computer science there's genius. Where has the genius gone? Where is it? How did it get absorbed and stolen and disappeared? Did we outsource genius? These guys weren't... Oh, turn it off. These guys were not given special courses in schools in Alabama to learn how to play the saxophone. No one came down to the school and said, you poor little kid, you. Our society's oppressed you. You're the son of a sharecropper. We'll give you some music lessons and send you to Juilliard. How did they learn how to do it without any government help? Where did it come from? I ask myself every day as I look around my country and I see zombies and zombettes. San Francisco, Joey, what do you see out there in the real world?
Dr. Savage, thank you for having me on. Listen, I'm totally apathetic. I gave it up. I run the best barn in the financial district, but I got to tell you, in a week, we're going to have the gay parade there, and I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it.
Well, I don't understand. There's another gay parade? Wasn't there just Gay Pride Year or something?
Oh, the 29th, it's going to be down there. I can't do it. I can't.
Oh, I see. Any twosome newsome will be the majorette, huh?
Yeah, it's not.
Is he going to be the drum majorette of the gay parade? You know, listen, when a society sinks to this level of disgust without leadership and corruption, the only thing left is sarcasm, cynicism, and a sense of humor. And very soon, the vermin will try to make that illegal. You understand that they can't even take criticism?
Totally understand it.
But keep doing it because it's still legal. Laugh at them, jeer them, mock them, tell them they're morons. That's your God-given right as an American citizen. Laugh at them. Don't take them seriously. Tell them what you think of them. You know, I have a wonderful housekeeper from El Salvador. She probably doesn't agree with most of what I say. I don't think she listens to the show much, but they know where I stand on immigration. I know they don't like what I say. I know that. I know the Latino community does not like me on that level. But I also know something else. She said to me, Michael, that's disgusting, she said to me, those old women with marriage. She says, what is that, Michael? She said, my son said to me, Mama, what is this sick thing, two old ugly women? I said, well, on that issue, I guarantee you agree with me. She said, yes, we all agree with you on that. We all agree with you on that. So, you know, it's a split decision here. You got to understand that no matter how the left vermin have tried to vilify me from my patriotic borders, language, culture stance, they can't win. And that's because even communities who disagree with me, let's say the Latinos and immigration, they agree with me on social issues other than immigration. Palestinians, who make up a large majority of the population in San Francisco, who are the most intelligent of the Arabic people. Anyone who knows Arabic people knows that the Palestinians are the most intelligent. I've known it since graduate school when I had Palestinian friends, believe it or not. Although we disagree on so many things about the Middle East, my family values are identical with that of my Arab listeners. And so don't think that the left wing is winning and that they're able to marginalize everybody who stands up to them. They're going to come to understand, the Palestinians, the Latinos, the blacks, that the communist left white man is their enemy. He is the new slave master. The communist left wing lawyer who tells them to hate the conservative is their worst enemy. Trust me, they're not stupid. Trust me. They're not to be manipulated as easily as the left thinks they can be. That's my opinion anyway. Lance, San Francisco, you're next up on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, the Germans had a word for coffee and other things during World War II, ersatz. It meant substitute or replacement. And it seems to me that we've settled for all sorts of substitutes and replacements now. And so here we are apathetic about them, perhaps because we've settled or they've been foisted on us. Whatever it is, it's all...
Well, you mean white bread as opposed to authentic homemade whole wheat bread, or a potato as opposed to a Pringle?
The true quality of things has been removed. Even I think it started with what? Imitation letter and leather and smiley faces for wrong math answers, and it's just been ersatz ever since.
Well, ersatz government. How much more does it more ersatz does it get than George Bush, who can't finish a paragraph without mangling the English? What is that? What does that tell a student in the first through seventh grade that the president cannot complete a sentence?
Maybe grades don't matter. It's tragic.
Maybe the presidency doesn't matter. That's all. Houston, Texas. Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation. They're making me tongue-tied. I forgot the name of the show already. Tony, what's on your mind?
I would like to say that I think I know where jazz went. It went along the side with the rest of the music, which has gone and turned into corporate rock, and you can't get musicians anymore.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that the rap artists are today are the Cannonball Adderleys and the Coltranes of yesterday?
No, I'm just saying the Coltrane disappeared, but they were replaced by the people who run the corporations who put out the same garbage.
Given that that's true, what if a Coltrane or a Charlie Parker arose today? Would he not find an audience?
No, they would not find an audience. They would never get any airplay because they would not have their demo CD accepted because it's not what the culture would want to listen to.
I see. All right, so it's like my hard edge show as opposed to a fake conservative talk show.
Correct.
I have an audience. It's the third largest radio show in America, even though it starts late in the day on the East Coast and early evening on the West Coast when most of the audience is gone. How come I found an audience? I'm like a jazz player when you consider what I do compared to a lot of what else is done. It doesn't mean you have to agree with every tune I play, but you know that the music is great. You know that. You know that, and I know that. And I don't need your approval. New Jersey, Raphael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Savage. I'm just calling you to say that I'm very proud of you for the way you teach us how to understand the situation, especially now that the elections are so close, and we got to understand the way this country's going.
God, no, I hear you, man. It's not an easy thing to do. Particularly, you know, my father was an immigrant to the country, Raphael, which is why I'm lucky. I have one foot in the old world, one foot as an immigrant son, one foot as an American-born son. I live in two different worlds, if not more. I understand what you people are going through. Trust me, it's not as black and white as everybody thinks.
Now, I came from Cuba back in 1968, and I tell you, I remember my father waiting in line at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I don't want the people here in the state to suffer the same thing I suffered back in...
You're talking about what Castro did to Cuba compared to what the Democrats and Obama are liable to do. To me, they're very much the same thing as the party in Cuba right now. I don't think they're too different.
Yeah, I see the same
thing. I am telling you, and you know I'm right, Obama is like the Fidel Castro of our time, only he's playing the nice guy. He's no
Savage.
Nice guy. Where have all the great musicians gone? None of these guys, this is Charlie Parker, but... I'll play it and then knock it off because you can't listen to a person talk and listen to jazz. It's impossible. I won't finish the sentence because it's a radio show. But the fact of the matter is, these guys weren't given a government grant to study jazz. They weren't sent to Juilliard or to Paris. Somehow they rose up. Most of them, I would suspect, I didn't read all their life stories, in poverty, racism, you name it. Didn't stop the kid who liked the horn from picking up the horn and playing it any more than it stops a boxer to learn how to box. They didn't need the government to teach him to go to a gym and hit someone and knock him out and find that he was a great fighter and then be trained how to fight. He didn't need the government to teach him how to become a boxer. What is this rubbish that you need a government program to become a musician? So what I'm asking is this, a different question. Where are all of the great musicians today, particularly in the sphere of music called jazz? Where are they in politics? Where are they, the leaders? I don't see it. So I'm going to show you some of the stories I put up on michaelsavage.com. I'm going to start on the bottom this time. Bottom left, why did big drug companies hide the benefits of a simple herb in treating hyperactivity? You got to read that story. Let's see. I'll just pick a few here. There. Mom and a boyfriend post pornographic photos of 8-year-old. Well, that would be acceptable to Judge Kaczynski, I would think, of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, because it's only their choice. It's a lifestyle choice. I mean, after all, a photo of the... If it's your daughter 8 years old, it's your right, I would think, if it went before Judge Kaczynski. Large numbers of senators don't have mortgages. What? What? They don't have mortgages? How'd they get their home loans? Gee. Well, they're looking into that one. On the right side, feds arrest Miami Beach munitions dealer. This is an amazing story from the Miami Herald. a 22-year-old kid whose father was in the scrap metal business got contracts up worth up to $300 million from the government to supply ammunition to the Afghan government when 2 years before they had no contracts. Now, you tell me there's no problem in America in the contracting sphere. Are you people insane? Do you have any idea what's going on here? More people have made more fortunes off the Iraq war than any single war in the history of this world. Do you know that? And that's why there's no longer any concerted effort to stop the war by the Democrats. Why do you think it's hush-hush from the Democrats since they seized power? Because they never had it so good. They have never had it so good. Never. Now, I don't want to remind you that this is tied into our inflation. It's tied into the collapse of our, let's say, the weakening of our currency. It's tied into high oil prices. For a million different reasons, it's tied into the elevated oil prices. I mean, where's the oil? Well, there's oil in Iraq. How come they're not paying us back through oil? Wouldn't it be logical to say we liberated 24 million Iraqis? Now, thank you very much. We're going to take payment in oil. That's your only natural resource because the American people have gone broke liberating you. All right, so now start pumping oil tomorrow. Pump it right out of the desert. And don't care what they say about the war for oil. I say oil for war. I wrote that about 2 months ago. See, that's enough of a campaign promise to get elected. I guarantee you if one of the candidates said oil for war instead of war for oil, he could win. But they have no imagination. Nor do they really want to change any of the status quo. They want exactly the same thing as we have now. So it doesn't matter whether you change the window dressing in the form of McCain or Obama to a great extent. I'm not so sure it matters. McCain, for example, let's go up michaelsavage.com. Four stories up. No, on the left side of the elevator, there's two stories that I want you to miss. Two stories below the Holster ad, there's a story called How Affirmative Action Works. That's my headline, of course. And it's about the city of Oakland, California, who had the highest-ranking non-elected official fired because of her attempts to protect an alleged member of a gang. You got to read this story. Now let's go up above the Holster ad. We get to the T-shirt ad, and here's a real shocker. McCain in closed-door meeting with Hispanic leaders. So he goes to a closed-door meeting with Hispanics in Chicago, and he tells them that he's going to grant them amnesty. Democrats question why the Arizona senator held a meeting late Wednesday night in Chicago. But supporters who were in the room denied that McCain held a closed-door session out of fear of offending conservatives, many of whom wanted to take a harder line on immigration. That's an understatement, many of whom. I mean, if you're a conservative, you wanted to take a harder line on immigration, not many of whom. But putting that aside, a Hispanic woman who's a conservative was really outraged. And she said, he's one John McCain in front of white Republicans, and he's a different John McCain in front of Hispanics, complained Rosana Pulido, a Hispanic and conservative Republican who attended the meeting. Pulido, who has the Illinois Minuteman Project, which advocates for restrictive immigration laws, she thought McCain was pandering to the crowd by emphasizing immigration reform in his 15-minute speech. He's having his private meetings to rally Hispanics and to tell them what they want to hear. She said, I'm outraged that he would reach out to me as a Hispanic but not as a conservative. Listen, Ms. Pulido, get in a long line of people who are disappointed in old Johnny McCain. My big question is McCain able? Mark that down. I'm the first to say it. I said it a year ago. Is McCain able? Now let's go back to jazz for a minute. Play some jazz. I'm sick of talking. Play Work Song. Who's this? Coltrane, I know that. But I can't miss that. Hey, play Cousin Mary for my friends on Mulberry Street. I mean on Polk Street. I mean on Cherry Street. I mean on Longfellow Avenue. I mean on Bush Street. I mean on Sutter Street. I mean on Van Ness Avenue. No, I mean Columbus Avenue. No, I mean Broadway. Now, let's say you don't understand jazz as I don't. I'm a man who doesn't understand music at all. Nothing. I know nothing about music. I'm incapable of understanding music. I'm only capable of enjoying music, okay? There's two different things. I can't even criticize music. I don't have the skill set to criticize music. But I know the difference between great music and bad music. I know the difference between great jazz and ersatz jazz. I know the difference between elevator music and Puccini. I know the difference between a leader and John McCain. I know the difference between an African-American leader and Obama. I know the difference between an authentic journalist and a leprechaun. I know the difference between a bagel and Barbara Boxer. I take that one back. They're too similar. Boxer is like a bagel that talks. If a bagel could talk, wouldn't it look like Barbara Boxer when you think about it? If a Knish could legislate, wouldn't it be Barbara Boxer? If a corned beef sandwich could harangue, wouldn't it be Barbara Boxer? If green beer could speak, wouldn't it have a show on Fox? Here's another story that I don't want you to miss before the weekend. There's a mayor in New York who pretends to be a Republican. His name is Bloomberg. So now Bloomberg, who ran as a Republican, is now campaigning for Obama, saying he's not a Muslim, and he's urging Jewish voters to end the false rumor that the Democratic president is secretly a Muslim. Now, Bloomberg should know that Obama's half-brother in Kenya is proud to say that his brother's a Muslim. He was raised a Muslim. And he has pictures to prove it. I had them on the website. If you're a Muslim, why hide it? Why not be proud of it? I don't get it. And then, of course, there's another story on the MichaelSavage.com website. Hawaiian groups demands restoration of monarchy. Good God. Hawaiian group demands restoration of the monarchy. So let's see what they're going to do now. If they get the... So they have their own government now. They claim the right to all land titles. They want to dissolve the state of Hawaii. They want the right to confiscate all bank assets in Hawaii. Isn't that interesting? Now, I don't have to remind you what Hawaii was before the missionaries stole it from them. Although the missionaries did steal Hawaii from the Hawaiians, I got to tell you, the Hawaiians are better off now than they would be if it was run by Hawaiians. I mean, let's be clear about this. What you got to do is go to the museum to understand what I'm talking about. Do you think these people are capable of running Hawaii as a nation? I kind of doubt it. But of course, the government's afraid of them. They're afraid of all activists, except white male, heterosexual, Christian conservatives. San Diego, Michelle, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, your comment on the edge and music. I love this. I think I'm actually a physician and a psychiatrist, but I think that it's a perfect toxic stew of too much drugs too soon. They're even drugging children now at the age of two, saying that they have ADHD. Then you take a child out to into any public place, and all you have is musical pablum in the form of Muzak, television, all this electronics. There are no spaces anymore in people's lives in which to create a sound or a melody.
That's interesting. Wow, that is so beautifully put. That's music to my ears. Because it's novel and original. Spaces to create. In other words, let me follow your logic for a minute. A kid needs time alone to do nothing in which to develop an idea, a thought, a skill. It can't be filled up with a video game or filled up with a computer obsession or filled up with homework or tennis lessons or golf lessons or a drug for that matter.
Unstructured playtime. It's non-existent.
Right. In other words, when I was a kid, I was a dreamy kid. I had a lot of time alone to think about a lot of things. And in those spaces, there came me. Isn't that what you're saying? A child needs to grow slowly. You can't force the growth by overpowering that child with all of these things.
Absolutely. Because you funnel in his electronic neurological system what he will grow into. It's like a plant that's trained toward the sunlight. If the sunlight is only toward one corner of the room, that's how his brain's going to grow. So if all you do is filter in, and it's only going to grow electronically, watching someone dig the hole is not the same as going out and smelling the earth and watching the earthworms crawl and feeling the earth give away to the shovel and smelling the smells and having the sun on your back. You're learning when you dig that hole. If you're watching someone dig a hole on a television, you might be able to regurgitate what it is they are doing, but you don't have that experience. So you can't you can't draw from that later when you want to draw a picture and or when you want to sing a song or you want to, you cannot form a melody. You become incapable of forming this. I looked at
Dr. Michelle, let me ask you something. Did you see the story 2 weeks ago of the so-called physicians at Harvard who were accused and arrested for having taken money from drug companies? Those are the very same psychiatrists, so-called, who prostituted themselves and wrote papers in so-called peer-reviewed journals saying it was okay to give Prozac-like compounds or Ritalin-like compounds to children as young as two. Did you catch that story?
Yes.
Could you believe... Is the profession that corrupt today?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes. In fact, I don't practice in it anymore. It is extremely corrupt. You cannot get paid. The good psychiatrist, and there are good psychiatrists out there who work hard and are in that drug model, I suppose, but the good psychiatrists are, you don't get paid because the only way you can get paid now is to get a job, and the only job you can get is a 20-minute session with someone to, quote, monitor their medications. So you have no...
No, this is very intriguing to me. There was a time in my era when psychiatry was a fairly well compensated profession. What happened? Managed care eliminated that type of therapy, or people have walked away from it and they simply want medication?
Definitely, I think it's, again, a perfect storm. It's managed care with the leveling. When I got out of school in 1987, just out of general medical school, the first word provider came about. And I remember a friend of mine said, I didn't go to provider school. And this leveling of the playing field, even in the 60s going to high school and college, we used to, you know, look at everyone and say, well, we're just the same as you. We're the same as our professors. They're the same as us. And then we became very apologetic. I'm so sorry I have this education. You know, I'm so sorry that I've gone to school for 8 years or 10 years or 13 years. And the first managed care person that tried to, they used to recruit you when I was in general practice, tried to recruit me, and she came in and said, don't you think you should be making as much money as specialists? And I said, first of all, I doubt you came to my door, looked at my name, and decided, aha, Michelle needs to make more money. And number two, I'm not cutting open anybody's brain. He went to school or she went to school and decided to take on that responsibility. Let them make three times as much as I do because it's worth it. But I knew the first medical director of Humana, and he was all about, he was a doctor, but he was saying, okay, the surgeon should not have to close. Let a tech close. Let them, you know, stitch up the body.
Wait, you mean that after the surgeon performs his duties within the body, he leaves and he lets a tech close it up to save an hour's worth of his time and fee?
Yes, I don't know what that...
Oh, my God, you're kidding me. That's how bad it's gotten?
I'm not sure they do it now. This is what he was talking about 8-10 years ago. Now, whether they actually implemented that, I'm not a surgeon, I don't know.
Oh, my God, that's horrible.
But, yeah, it's pathetic, but also, you know, you also have, and I know some wonderful, wonderful social workers and psychologists, but what happens is many people who didn't go to medical school and who prefer, like what they imagine is the status of a doctor, which really is bad now, they want...
The technicians who think that they're doctors, that type.
They want to be the same as, so they
yes.
think, oh, how hard can it be to prescribe?
Yeah, you know, I've seen that in the hospitals. They walk in, you don't know the difference between the doctor or the nurse or the technician anymore, or the person who draws the blood, for that matter.
It's the lowest bidder.
What is that all about? It's sort of like Mao Zedong's China, where the doctor has to play himself down to make believe he's the same as the person, the phlebotomist who takes blood.
Exactly. And my son, who's also an incredible diagnostician, when he was in medical school and when he got into the clinics, one day he was there at 2 a.m, and he called the attending physician, and he said, it hit him at that moment. I'm here at 2 a.m, I'm calling a physician, waking him up at 2 a.m, and yet he is the lowest on the totem pole, he has no respect, and he makes about as much as a surgical tech. So I'm not going to do that. And he left. So,
Michelle, how many years did you go to school before we go to break?
Oh, my goodness. I went to school about six college because I had children. I went to 4 years of medical school. I did an internship. I did 8 years of general practice, and then I went back and did 4 more years in a psychiatry residency.
And now you're not practicing at all? You're lost to the to the universe of care?
I'm lost to the universe of care. I'm doing other
Hold on. I want to hear more about why you left medicine with all of that incredible investment of your genius. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how.
It is rock and roll slash jazz slash reality Friday at the Savage Nation. Thank you. Knock it off already. Michelle, San Diego, welcome back. Michelle is a trained psychiatrist who has left the field. Michelle, why did you leave psychiatry?
Well, personal reason was because I had aging parents and I wanted to help them out. But the compelling reason is that to do psychiatry correctly, it is almost impossible unless you've been doing it for a while. I learned that from World War II veterans and Vietnam veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder that I worked with in my residency. I love them. However, I could spend 2 and 3 hours with them at a time. When I went to look at the jobs from the VA, you'd get maybe 6-7 minutes, and that was
Oh, my God. The guy walks in and he walks out till he calms down, takes him an hour.
Yeah, that's, in fact, that's what they say, is that you come in and you've got these things that you've done in your life that...
Well, you sound like a very compassionate, caring woman to have devoted yourself to your parents. To devote yourself to your parents like this means that you really have a great heart.
Well, I do, but...
I'll tell you what, I'll fire my producer and I'll hire you as my personal psychiatrist. You could be around me all day long and keep me sane.
Well, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, if anyone could do that, they're better than Sigmund Freud. Michelle, thanks for being such a good sport and staying with us on the Savage Nation. What a great caller that was. And when I come back here on the Savage Nation, we'll have other great callers like Michelle. As I say, this show has its ups and its downs, but there's one thing that's consistent, and I do believe this is true. I have the best callers in the entire talk radio world. Everybody in the business knows that. And the reasons are manifest. Destiny.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, Jazz Friday.
In 3.5 months' time, this action, known as Operation Malicious Mortgage, has resulted in charges against more than 400 individual defendants. Yesterday alone, 60 people were arrested and faced charges, and the arrests continue today. Mortgage fraud poses a significant threat to our economy, to the stability of our nation's housing markets, and to the peace of mind of millions of American homeowners.
All right. I have to say, good first step, Department of Justice briefing on Operation Malicious Mortgage and the Bear Stearns indictments. There's no question in my mind some of these people are going to jail. However, these are middle managers. They're not the head of the corporate pirate ships. It's very much akin to what's been going on with Mr. Chassani. Even though he is innocent, they've gone after somebody somewhat in the middle of the management chain, not the generals.
In other words, if there was really a massacre at Haditha, which there wasn't, then the general in the food chain should have been indicted. The very general who threw Chassani under the bus and then was rewarded for it by being given a bigger position. The same thing here. If you're going to take away Mr. Tannen and Mr. Chiaffi of Bear Stearns and indict them because one said to the other in an email the following, and this is in the New York Times today, when the giant hedge funds they oversaw were apparently in trouble. One said, "I'm fearful of these markets." The other wrote back, "Believe it or not, I've been able to convince people to add more money." He concluded, "I think we should close the funds now." But we read 3 days later, the pair, Ralph Chiaffi and Matthew M. Tannen, presented an upbeat picture to worried investors without disclosing that the two funds were plummeting in value and that Mr. Chiaffi had already pulled some assets from one of them. Now, we all know what happened. And if this is true, they're in really deep trouble. However, let's back up for a minute. The head of Bear Stearns, the chief guy, sold off some of his own stock in December of the year before the collapse, December of 07, according to a previous article. How come he wasn't indicted, people are asking. Why did they omit the indictment of guys who inherited Bear Stearns? Maybe they were involved in this conspiracy to bring down a competitor and pick up the assets. And let's go a step further, since we're analyzing this as stupid people who don't know anything. What about the Treasury Secretary himself, who previously, in his previous job, was the CEO of a competitor, who just happened to come out real well out of all of this? How come Goldman Sachs came out so well after all of this? And how come Goldman Sachs has created Treasury Secretaries two or three administrations in a row? Did they have anything to do with this? I doubt it. Well, what do you mean I doubt it? How do I know that? All I can say is, apparently the Justice Department is doing the right thing. They're on the right track. Whether they'll ever go higher up in the food chain, I don't know. I really don't know. These two guys look to me like they knew what was going on and they hid it. But I don't think they were alone in it, because if you look back on who sold what when, they're not the only ones. So there are plenty of guys who are going to be going to jail and plenty of families destroyed and ruined, as they should be. I have no sympathy for these people. Don't get me wrong. What about the people who lost their pensions? What about the people who lost their entire life savings? Those are the people I have more sympathy for. So there's plenty of sharks out there. No matter what you say about me, I'll tell you something. Every dime I make is an honest dime. I don't take it from anybody, and I never did in my whole life. No matter what you may say about me, you may not like my politics, I never hurt anybody with my jobs, never. I never took from anybody, not a penny. My father taught me that. That's more than I could say for most of my liberal detractors. That's all I can tell you. New Orleans, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thank you so much. You do have a smart clientele. I am a... and George, Michelle, I am a retired physician also, family practice MD, and mm-hmm. I quit at 50. I quit. I couldn't take it anymore.
Let's say, so you put in all that training, then at 50 you quit, and obviously your lifestyle diminished, didn't it?
Absolutely. I live very sparsely, and I don't care, because I could not handle it anymore. This society is in chaos and is headed toward chaos. If you don't put any energy in it, and your music showed me that, when you were playing that jazz music instead of the rock and roll, it told me that if you look at, nobody writes classic music anymore, and then you go to something like jazz, which nobody can play anymore, and then you go to the garbage that we have now, that shows you the decline, that nobody puts energy into anything, politics.
Yes, yes. In other words, even that jazz I was playing, which was great jazz, Coltrane, Adderley, you name it, that was great music, but it took incredible work to get there.
And you don't see that anymore.
I mean, you take any gangbanger in prison. He can get up and he can strum on a jail bar and sing, you know, "The man he got me, the gang he got me, the man he got me, and I got him, I got him, I got him. The man he got me, I'm going to give him, I'm going to give him, I'm going to give him. I'm going to give him like I got, I give him like I got, I give him like I got. The man he got me." That's music? Anybody could do that. And yet that's elevated now to music. Every dumb moron in the street is a rap artist.
Well,
it takes no skill to get up there and do a bad tone poem and bang on something.
And it's not just music, Michael. It's everything. It's government. It's the politics. This is why we have such weak politicians right now. Everything. Nobody puts any effort into anything. And we are in a decline, which, as you know, in the universe, if you don't put energy into it, you go to chaos.
So, yeah, okay, so you're saying from apathy, the next stage is chaos.
That's it.
What would you say about a leaderless leader like George Bush, who was incapable of finishing a sentence without mangling it? Why did he come along at this time in our history?
I don't know, and it's sad. It's a sad commentary on our society that those kind of people get elected.
You know, I know a lot of people who voted for him who say they're embarrassed to listen to the man speak, and they have been for years now. They cringe when he gets up and speaks. But the way he speaks is only a symptom of the man's actions. When you think about it, what I'm about to play in the Savage Nation when I come back will indicate what I'm talking about. He gave out Presidential Medals of Freedom or something the other day, the highest medal. And he gave them to diehard lifetime liberals. Did you know that? The Presidential Medal of Freedom was given to none other than Bill Clinton's Donna Shalala. Now, how in the world could a so-called Republican do this and give away a Medal of Freedom to Donna Shalala unless he's out of touch with reality? And this is an example of the chaos you're talking about. Thank you for calling. So the man didn't want to stay in the business, Health and Human Services. Can you imagine this? Remember Donna Shalala? She's the small, she looks like a bowling pin. Play the piece so they know what we're talking about. Clip three.
When Donna Shalala was 10 years old, or tornado
she wanted to be
her,
a bowling pin.
Struck her house in her neighborhood near Cleveland.
And she had to give up her job as a lifetime ambition to be a bowling pin.
But couldn't find her anywhere.
So she became a governmental worker.
Down the road.
Although she could not be a bowling pin, she became a Secretary of Health and Human Services. I'll be right back. I'm going to do the man like he do me. Do the man, do the man. Gonna do the man who doo-dooed me. Do the man who doo-doo me. I'm gonna do the man like he do me. I'm gonna do the man, I'm gonna do the man, gonna do the man who doo-dooed me. So that's now the equivalent of John Coltrane, I guess, on the Savage Nation. I mean, something anybody could do. That's the whole point I'm trying to make. That's not music. That's not greatness. That's not genius. That's not even ersatz music. It's nothing. It's a complete creation of nothingness. So why does the audience, why is an audience existent for nothingness? Because the audience has no taste. The audience has no experience with what is. They have no idea the difference between real jazz, for example, and rap music. New York, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, hello.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to just want to say that jazz was not played for the way it is now. It used to be played by the heart and the soul. I mean, most of these guys didn't even know how to read music.
Mm-hmm.
They played by learning it. And
oh, no, but that was my point. What was the motivation within them to want to even learn it and play it?
Their soul, they wanted to do it. They had to express themselves.
All right, so when I hear Coltrane's horn, I hear a soul screaming out.
Excuse me?
When I hear Coltrane's horn, I hear a soul screaming out. All right, thanks for the call. Okay, let's go back to the basics already. I'm going to lose the audience. It's too esoteric, I can tell. There's not enough Obama-McCain, Democrat-Republican, meat and potatoes, gravy. I understand it. I feel like the doctor already. I feel like stepping away from the profession. It's become exactly the same as medicine in a way. It's too demanding, the whole thing, what to do this, talking to myself now. What did I want to play here? I did the rap song. There was something that was on my mind that I wanted to... warranty horror stories. I'll tell you why. I have a certain Italian coffee machine that I told you about that you could scald your crotch, you could lose your groin, you could lose your appendage. Wonderful machine when it works. The best coffee I ever had in my life. But you press one wrong button, you get a blast of hot steam in your crotch. You're a dead man. So anyway, I got a bunch of them in four different places. I got four of these machines. One of them has been acting up. It makes coffee, and it says descale. You try to descale it. It says defuse. You try to follow the instructions for 30 minutes. You defuse it. Then it says descale it. Then it says drop dead altogether. Send it back. So I had the guys call up the company today on a warranty. And we're going to play for you in a few minutes what we got back without telling you the name of the company. And it led me to a larger story, which is warranties and why they're worthless. And why companies delay you with press one for this and press three, and then we'll send you a tag. Because they know nobody has the time for it. So the warranties are as good as worthless. But I got to tell you, there is one company that did live up to its warranties. Remember I complained about my tires? Remember I said to you the tires broke and I didn't know why? Continental Tires, to their credit, lived up to their warranty, and I have to thank them for that. I had to go directly to them. They lived up to their warranty. And now I have the tires sitting in my garage, and I don't know what to do with them because I had to pay for them. The ones, now they'll never break again. I got these huge monster tires in the garage. They look nice. I feel like I'm ready for the siege in case it all comes down, man. You know what I mean? I can kill deer, and I got extra tires for another 30,000 miles in case I have to hunt for deer. But later on, we'll play the war. Do you have any warranty horror stories, or do you know what I'm talking about? I thought it'd be an interesting topic. You ever try to collect on a warranty? Whatever. So I want to go back to the edginess thing, and then I'm going to take some callers from musicians on the line, because I was hoping I'd get some real jazz musicians who really knew the greats and played in them. What motivated these guys? As the last caller said, many of them were illiterate. They couldn't even read music, yet they could play great music. How did they become great musicians? So I have a theory. The theory is built upon the fact that today the kids are drugged. They've been exposed to the internet. The psychiatrist called and said that they have no empty spaces to develop anything in the area of edginess. And I've also said that the edginess has been ironed down, ironed out, flattened in our society. That anyone who really stands out winds up either in prison or a madhouse. You follow what I'm saying to you? Florida, Stephen, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm a musician. I'm a drummer for 30 years. And what I've heard about the music that you are referring to, basically the rap kind of music, is basically, it's repetitive. It's boom, boom, boom. And it's almost like a driving beat, and it takes you almost all the way back to the times of Africa, where it's almost like voodoo and stuff like this. And it's you get people in clubs, and they're drinking, and they hear this monotonous beat over and over that has no melody, that has no heart. It's just, and that's why it's so simple to play, because it's more or less 4-4 time. It's very simple.
Well, if even I can make up a fake rap lyric on this show with a monotonic, you know, fake beat in the background, anybody could do it, if I can do it.
And pretty much as far as a musician goes, I don't read music, and I never have. But to me, I'm a very good drummer. I believe I'm a very good drummer, and I don't play repetitive beats. I play something that's got feeling and heart to it. And I believe you're either a musician or you're not. You either have it or you don't. And the ones that do try to play, they really don't have it, but they think they do. And why they think they have it is because it's the beat is so repetitive of a 4-4 beat. Anybody can play it.
Yeah.
So to me, I totally agree with you, and I love your music that you play at the beginning of your show. And I just wanted to comment on that. These people are ignorant. They have no education. They know no. They have no heart. They have no feeling when it comes to music at all whatsoever.
Right. Contrary to the music I played at the beginning, the real greats of jazz who had the opposite of all of that. They had intuition, feeling, and genius. You have to admit they had genius. But there was no government program teaching John Coltrane how to play the saxophone, was there?
That's exactly right.
No, sir. Thank you. Keep on the beat. Keep on the beat. Keep on the beat. Keep on the beat. Keep on. What is PTCD? I don't know what that is. Listen to the Coffee Maker warranty. Start it now.
Thank you for calling. If you know the extension of the person you are calling, you may dial it at any time. Please listen to the following options. For sales and marketing, press 1. For accounting, press 2. For customer service, press 3.
Please hold while I try that extension.
Lester speaking.
My name is Beowulf Rocklin. I'm the executive producer of the Savage Nation. I'm recording this conversation for a national program. My host, Michael Savage, has several machines that are not working. And I want to find out if we can get them replaced.
Okay, to repair them, correct? Are they under warranty? How long are each machine? Is one, say, 2 years old? Is one?
They're all currently under warranty.
Okay. Are they all, were they ever registered in the system?
They've all been registered and are all currently under warranty. The basic thing here is that what is it possible to do for him at this point?
Okay. What we can do is...
what we can do is have him buy a new machine. Take him and throw him in San Francisco Bay. I'll be right back. This is an example of a warranty.
Savage.
Oh, I love this piece. Is this Gillespie? Who is this? Right. And this is Night in Tunisia. I just love this piece of music. Listen to this. I mean, for a minute, you don't have to be a jazz lover. All right, well, the point I'm making has been well accepted here on the Savage Nation, but there's more to it than what we said. Now, there was this drug issue. The jazz musicians at that time used a certain type of drug. I would suppose they used a high amount of marijuana, but it was a totally different marijuana. The THC content, while it got them high, did not annihilate their creativity. In other words, the regions of the mind that created or performed. Today, the THC content of marijuana is so overwhelmingly high that it numbs the person. So let's not rule out the drug influence. And there are so many other factors as to why creativity of that type is almost impossible to find today. But there's a bigger story, and the bigger story is the apathy in the population in general, which is why we have a president like Bush, and why we have candidates like this nobody, this non-entity Obama, and the sad sack McCain. Why would a man like McCain go and appease a Hispanic group behind closed doors and not speak to conservatives? Why would McCain go to Canada and appeal to Canadians and not appeal to the conservative base? It makes no sense. None of this makes sense. None of it makes sense to all of us, which is why their poll numbers are so low. We know what's going on. You know, we may be apathetic to a certain extent, but we're not completely hypnotized, I believe. San Francisco, Kamu. Kamu, please forgive me if I mispronounce your name. What's on your mind?
Is actually Kamau, Dr. Savage?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I just want to comment on apathy. I've been listening to your show for over 3.5 years, and you're definitely the only person that's been showing true apathy, true emotions of what's really happening in our world. And the thing is that so many people don't know or don't have a clue of what the heck is going on in our society. It just seems like people just don't care. It's unbelievable to me. I'm a 34-year-old father. I have a 5-month-old and I have a 2.5-year-old. And I'm teaching my kids to show, hey, emotions is natural. It's okay to show emotions. But when you show lack of emotion, it's a real problem. And when I see when the people in our society don't care about these candidates, you got an unknown character like Obama, and then you got John McCain, who's just weak. You know, it's just crazy to me.
Right, and we've got an increasingly hostile world where China, India, Russia, the Middle Easterners are on the warpath, and we are showing weakness at every turn.
Absolutely, we are. It's a shame, man.
It's more than a shame. Countries have, someone very dear to me said last night, there are countries that have lost and disappeared. I said, what are you talking about? He said, Germany lost. They were once strong. Japan lost. They were once strong. I said, well, we're not Germany or Japan. He said, you're not listening to what I'm saying to you. He said, we could lose. We could lose this thing. He said, we could be a conquered people in his lifetime. That's what he said to me last night. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that 100%. And you know what, Dr. Savage? That's why you need to continue to do what you're doing, because you're the man of hope. I believe God is using you to really speak to people. And if just people are listening to what's going on, because I'm the person, I'm African-American, and no, I'm not going for Obama. And a lot of people seem like they want to go for him just because they're emotionally, they want change because they're pissed off at Bush, but they don't realize that this is going to turn into a Cuban-style country. We don't want that, man.
I agree 1,000%, but you see, you're one of the few. You're one of the few who actually understand that just because a man may be of a certain racial type does not mean he's necessarily a leader or good for the country, and that he may not represent the kind of change you want. In other words, be careful of the word change. The early communists brought about change in Russia. I don't know if you could argue that it was change that was good for the average Russian. You know, this guy Chavez has brought about change in Venezuela. Has it been good for the middle class in Venezuela? No. So wherever you look that a revolutionary appeared, there was change, but the middle class usually disappeared. And that is what worries me about this Obama. He represents the hard left faction of the Democrat Party, and they are as close to being Marxist as you can come to.
Right, absolutely. And look at his radical left folks, man. I mean, the Flager, Jeremiah Wright, Farrakhan, and all of these guys who are some of the most dangerous people you can ever realize. And when I tell people being an independent conservative about, hey, we got to stop Obama from getting in, you got to really think about who the heck you vote for, I get a blank stare. Like, what? You're not voting.
You're lucky you only get a blank stare rather than staring at a blank.
Yeah, they are. They are. It's just.
Yeah, I'm saying you're lucky you don't get more than a blank stare with people because they're absolutely militant about this Obama character. You know, here in Marin County, California, where I live part-time, you see people driving expensive cars with Obama stickers. You see them living in expensive houses with an Obama poster on their front lawn, and you just have to laugh at them. That's all you can do.
And I do. I do. And even here in Walnut Creek, I've seen people who had Obama post signs in their front yard. I like thinking, oh, my God. I'm always constantly telling my wife how dangerous this guy really is.
Yeah, but it's these white liberals are totally in love with this man as an idea. Why is the white liberal so enamored of Obama? Can you explain that to me? Because I don't understand it.
You know, Dr. Savage, they don't. I think they don't really understand the concept of black theology liberation or black liberation theology. So they want to, you know, from the beginning, Dr. Savage, I remember I was really, I was really concerned about him because I saw the media when they started promoting him. Several years ago. This started several years ago when he gave the speech at the convention, the Democratic Convention, 2004. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, you know, look where he is. He went from no experience being going into U.S. Senate, and now he's a presidential candidate for choice. And it's the media that has promoted him. And so everybody just emotionally fell in love with this guy. And it's just...
But the question remains, why are well-off white liberals enamored of Obama?
Because they probably wanted to see a man of color, I think, change, because they just think he's going to bring the change that they want.
So in other words, it's white guilt again, the same old white guilt thing, basically comes down to that simplistic answer.
You know
they're guilty. They're guilty, and they feel guilty for what happened to blacks, so they think they're going to make up for it by giving it to this guy who was given a silver spoon in his life. He grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth, this one.
And they did.
He was never poor. His white grandparents raised him.
Yep, absolutely. And when you read about his family,
his father ran off back to Africa and became a drunken Marxist who died a broken man in Africa. He thought he'd be a big leader. The father went back and became a drunk and a loser and never, ever contributed to the support of Obama. Now, you can't blame the son for what the father did, but what's this with the black experience? What part of him is the black experience, I'd like to know?
Well, the thing is, he's half black and half white.
All right, so let's have that discussion. So therefore, he could just as easily say he's a white man, couldn't he?
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
So why didn't he identify as a white man? Because it wouldn't have gotten him anything.
That's That's correct. They wouldn't have.
If he had identified overly with the 50% white side of his racial identity, then white liberals would have had nothing special about him to relate with. But the minute he changed from Barry to Barack, they started falling in line. I mean, you know from your experience the way white people react to you as a black person, I'm sure, to begin with, how they change around you. Am I right or wrong?
They, you know what, I don't get too much of, how would I say it, prejudice so much from whites, but sometimes I do. So,
Wait a minute, I didn't say you get overt prejudice, you get a kind of reverse prejudice from the liberals who go out of their way to be nice to you, is what I'm saying.
Yes, that's
all right. Well, that's prejudice. In other words, suddenly it's like they go from being their normal a-hole self, pardon me, their normal selves, into something different when they're dealing with you. They put on the all smile button face. I can guarantee it.
They do. Absolutely, uh-huh. They do.
See, I can't imagine what it would be like to be, truthfully, it's very hard for me to comprehend this. I can only suspect what it must be like to be an authentic black person in America. Around white liberals who change around them and put on the gooey, nice, I love you attitude. I mean, it would drive me crazy.
It drives me crazy, too, and I've experienced that in my 34 short years of life, absolutely.
But I would think you'd probably be more comfortable around a Southern conservative man who's not going to change his way of life, his way of relating to the world simply because a black man's around him. A guy who treats you just like he treats everybody else. If he's gruff, he's gruff to you like the other people. He doesn't suddenly become saccharine and a Mr. Sweetheart.
Yes, absolutely. You're 100% right on that.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. So now let's get down to the Obama phenomenon. The white liberal, by overreacting to the man in this way of worshiping him and elevating him to Godhead, in other words, deifying him, is in a way projecting their racism.
Yes,
in other words, for the opposite reasons, they're projecting their racism by worshiping him.
And they are. They really are. Absolutely.
Well, let me just say this. I'm watching all these polls and this and that. I personally think that it's McCain's race to lose, and he's trying to lose it. And I'll tell you why. Obama has no general appeal in the public. This appeal is manufactured by the media and the Democrat Party. The average American person has never been polled. They never are polled. They don't respond to polls. This is all nonsense. The problem is McCain is doing the best job possible of driving away the very core that could get him elected. I'll be right back, my friend. Thanks for calling the Savage Nation.
Savage.
A little heavy jazz for you on the Savage Nation, not light jazz. I don't like light anything. I don't like light beer. I don't like light weights. I don't like light jazz. I don't like elevator music. I don't like people in elevator shoes. Stan Getz and Charlie Parker, Desafinado, for your listening pleasure today on the Savage Nation.
I'm proud
anyway,
of what we've accomplished.
Listen
together.
To this now.
Because of our common market, our workers are better able to compete and to find opportunities of their own.
Hold on. This is John McCain, who wants to be president, sneaking up to Canada and giving a speech about the wonders of NAFTA, telling the Canadians, mainly the Canadian government, that American workers are better off as a result of NAFTA. Listen to this rubbish.
In the global economy, there's still more work to do. Complying with NAFTA's rules of origin can be cumbersome,
mm-hmm,
and it can
mm-hmm,
be costly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
border
mm-hmm.
delays can pose a serious impediment to trade.
Well, wipe out the border, John.
It's basically the equivalent of a tariff.
Right.
And even now,
it's time to get rid of the border.
We have to defend it without equivocation in political debate. We have to.
Right. Why do you have to defend NAFTA without equivocation in political debate, John? Because your masters told you to do so? That's absurd. That's ridiculous. NAFTA has been a net loss for the American worker. It's wiped out entire industries. NAFTA has been a net gain for the corporate pirates, like the type that are in handcuffs now at Bear Stearns. So if you want Bush 3, you got it. That's all. And if you want Marx 2, you got it on the other side. So the choice between Marx 2 and Bush 3, that's the choice. 1-800-449-8255. Marx 2 or Bush 3 is my view of what's, you know, what we've got here. Marx 2, Bush 3, bah, humbug. There's no news out there. The only real news would scare you out of your mind, so I'm not going to give it to you. It would scare you to death if you actually looked at the real news, what's going on and how the... It's like you look at it from like an eagle's point of view, floating around the universe, looking down. You see what's going on. You've got biblical era flooding in the Midwest. If you have any idea what these Midwest floods are going to do to corn and wheat futures and what it's going to do to food prices a year from now, I think you'd be alarmed. I can't predict what's going to happen. I know that speculation is already fueling the price of oil, and I think that the speculation in oil should be stopped. I believe that the speculation in certain basic food crops should be stopped. Many of you don't realize that this whole concept of speculating on futures has not always been permitted, especially in times of emergency. Why shouldn't we suspend the speculation on corn and wheat? Do you want to see corn and wheat go to a level where a loaf of bread is $100 and you'll say it's the free market? Would you like to see gasoline go to $25 a gallon because of speculators? No, I told you on a previous show, we had this discussion before about short selling and how short selling is a rather recent phenomenon in the market and that the government has the power to intervene and stop short selling in order to make certain that certain basic industries aren't destroyed. So you say, well, Mike, now you're starting to sound like the Democrats. No, I'm starting to sound like a nationalist, not like the Democrats. I'm starting to sound like a man who understands that speculation can destroy a nation as it has destroyed many nations in the past. Many of you have been hoodwinked into believing that unbridled speculation is equal to capitalism, but you're wrong. Capitalism must be controlled in order to be fair. Right now, we have an uncontrolled sort of predatory capitalism as a result of deregulation. There must be regulation. You say, well, no, you can't have regulation. Why, that's government interference. That's exactly right. A government is supposed to protect the people, not to exploit the people. And if the government will not control wild speculation in basic commodities such as oil, then they're not protecting the people. I've gone a step further. Not only have I said we should control speculation in oil futures, I've also said we should demand that Iraq pay us back the $500 billion estimate, it's probably much more, that we have pumped into that economy, not to mention the blood that's been spilled there, American blood, to liberate 24 million Iraqi people. Don't you think they owe us something for that? Well, of course they do, but they're not going to pay us back unless we take it. They're an ungrateful people. They're an ungrateful people. There are 24 million ingrates as far as I'm concerned. How else do you explain that when the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad of Iran, went to Iraq, which was an outrage to begin with, he did not go to the green zone because he was afraid of the American troops there. Instead, he went to Chalabi's little bunker. And Chalabi was protected by special Shiite militias, not by the new Iraqi police who we have propped up and put in place. Doesn't it tell you that the strategy is all wrong and that we have lost control in Iraq? Doesn't it tell you that something needs to change here radically in order for this to go forward correctly? Well, of course, we all know that. The question is, what kind of change do you want? And the answer is, it's not Marx II. Augusta, Georgia, Michael, your comments, please. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, it's been a long time. I think it's been around about 8 years since I spoke with you.
But thank you.
You know, I was up in Atlanta, and I heard you talking about the speculators and stuff like that. It's not all about digging oil. I'm glad you explained to the people what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Democratic Party and the Republican Party is wrong on this issue.
That's right. If a man is going to start paying $20 for a loaf of bread, God forbid, a year from now, it's going to be because of unbridled speculation in wheat futures. That has to be curtailed immediately. We have an emergency as a result of these floods in the Midwest.
Exactly, Mike. You did.
How come I'm the only one saying it? Why isn't John McCain saying this?
Because he don't know. You remember, he was one of the guys that said he don't know much about the economy. And I believe it.
Well, my friend, we're in a heap o' trouble, as they say down around your parts, and I don't know that either of these gentlemen can lead us out of it because they're not they're front men for powerful interests, Michael. We all know that. And the question is, which band of powerful interests will be better for America? That's all it comes down to. Now, if we actually knew who the puppeteers were, then we would know which way to go on this.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation with Jazz Friday or whatever. No one does this anymore. We are trying to figure out why. Drugs, computer, government, dumbing down, Coltrane. Is this Naima? My favorite thing. I always get it mixed up. Anyway, here we are. Here we are in the Savage Nation. We're going through a heat wave. Has nothing to do with global warming. It happens every year, and by Sunday or Monday, we'll be back to 65 degrees. Right now, it's 92 degrees in downtown San Francisco, if you can believe it. That's very unusual. Very hot, and you got idiots walking around in undershirts and saying, wow, I love this weather. And I have to say to them, then why don't you move to Mexico? Because this is not San Francisco weather. 108 degrees in Las Vegas right now, 118 degrees in Palm Springs. I don't know why people live in these places. I never understood it. I mean, they called it Death Valley for a reason, you know. Who would go there? But I wanted to talk about air conditioning for a minute, because I'm an air conditioning lover. And when the kids were young, I didn't have air conditioning. A, we didn't have it in the house, and B, we couldn't afford it. I remember hot nights right out here in California. We slept like I owned a house, mind you. I took every penny I had, $9,000 at the time, way back in the early 70s, and I bought a little house in one of the back counties here. And, you know, simple house, post-war, you know, single wall construction, and no air conditioning. And on very hot nights, I put a mattress out on the deck, and we slept with the kids out on the deck, very much like the tenements that my grandfather and grandmother were in. There was no social evolution. They put mattresses on the fire escapes to escape the heat, and I put a mattress on a deck to escape the heat. It was the same exact thing when it comes down to it, with a different background. But as time went on, I realized I can't live without air conditioning. So now every place that I'm in must be air conditioned. I can't sleep without it. But I remember the prejudice. I'm going to get to a political point in a minute. I remember way back when, even then, I had to get a room air conditioner for the one room that I put in the window and hung over the window for the bedroom because you couldn't sleep. You get these idiots, the libs today, were the same as then. They'd say, well, we shun air conditioning here in the Bay Area. We don't need air conditioning. We don't use it here. They're all like holier than thou even then. We don't need air conditioning. We have natural air conditioning. Yeah, right. I have natural air conditioning. I'd like to tell you where you got natural air conditioning, but it's not in your bedroom. You got natural air conditioning between your ears, Johnson. The greatest invention of mankind in the modern era is air conditioning, next to the pneumatic brake. That's unbelievable. How can you live without it? You can't sleep for 10 seconds. Wonderful air conditioning. Say, well, okay, now you're going against the natural here. Yeah, well, I'm not Mr. Natural, man. I do shower. I don't believe in, like, patchouli oil and not the girls not shaving under their arms. I'm not one of those people. Leave that for the Obama supporters. The Barbara Boxerites, they're the people with the patchouli oil in their head. In tonight's sky, the summer triangle rises in the east just after dark. Its brightest star is Vega, not to be confused with vegan, located some 150 trillion miles away, a distance that takes light 25 years to travel. When we look at Vega tonight, we're seeing light that left it in 1983. Ooh. Do you ever think about the speed of light and what light years really mean? I remember when I was teaching junior high school science 1,000 years ago, how I first explained it to the children, and they were awed by it. Because you can take children and you can transport them with words if you know what you're talking about. So when I was trying to teach what a light year was to a child, you should see the lights go on in their eyes when you explain it to them. It really gave them the idea of magic. They were not drugged. They could follow a thought. I would tell them to sit back and relax for a minute. I'm going to explain what a light year means. So I said, let's look at a star that's 4 light years away. Okay. That means that the light that we're seeing when we look at that star, the light of that star at night, left that star 4 years ago. So a bright kid, I'll never forget to this day, in the 7th or 8th grade, said to me, well, what does that mean about us, and what does it mean about eternity? I said, let me explain it to you another way. Let us say there's life on another planet, and they're training their telescopes on Earth. But this other universe and this other planet is 25,000 light years away from us. What they would see if they trained their telescope on the Earth today would be what occurred on this Earth 25,000 years ago. And if they trained it on the Earth today, they wouldn't see you until 25,000 years from now. So then another bright kid in the class said, wait, Mr. Savage, does that mean that our images are traveling forever throughout the universe and that we're immortal? And I said, yes, you got it. That your entire life is like a series of photographs. And every image of every day of your life could be transmitted forever through the universe to a distant planetary body. Now you say, well, that's too complicated for me. Well, it wasn't too complicated for kids in the 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. Some of them understood it. And it sort of proved in a logical fashion that we're eternal and there is eternity. Do you understand that? You get it? I mean, I thought it was beautiful. And when you see the kids' eyes light up when you tell them that, I don't know why they loved it, but they loved it. But it's true. If I say to you that there's a star called Vega, and it's 150 trillion miles away, and it takes light 25 years to travel here, and then when you look at that star Vega tonight, you're seeing light that left that planet in 1983. Well, the reverse is also true. That means that if there is life on Vega, and they're looking at the Earth, and they train their telescopes or whatever instruments they're using on Earth, well, it means it maybe takes 25 years for light to travel to them. So if they trained their telescopes on Earth today, and that image could pick you up, you'd be seen 25 years from now in exactly the state you are right that moment, even though you might be dead. Do you understand what I'm saying here? So it gives you some concept that the religionists may be correct, that there is eternity. And even the laws of the universe support the concept of heaven and earth and eternity itself. At least that's the way one man sees it here on the Savage Nation. I guess I'm just playing some jazz words for you on the program, giving you something to enjoy on this afternoon of the doldrums, because America is not only apathetic, it's in the doldrums. We all know that no matter who wins, we're going to be lied to. Whether it's Marx 2 or Bush 3, it doesn't matter. In fact, up next is an interview I did earlier with Representative Sue Myrick, a certifiably good congresswoman, on our addiction to Middle Eastern oil. Addiction to Middle Eastern oil. And what we can and must do about that. And I think it's worth listening to. That's why I did the interview. As far as the news headlines go, I've given you the best headlines you're going to get today on MichaelSavage.com. What is the lead story? Well, to me, confidence in Congress at record low. And this is according to the liberal Gallup poll. Only 12% of Americans now have confidence in Congress, the lowest percentage in the 35 years the Gallup poll has tracked the number. Bush is at 24%, which is very low. But did you know that Congress is at 12% after the Democrat takeover? So what does that tell you about whether it's Democrats or Republicans running things? It tells you that we're fed up with them. It tells you that we all know that they're just pointing fingers at each other and doing nothing. It tells you that there's one giant party called the oligarchy. They may call themselves Democrats or they may call themselves Republicans, but I called them Demicans or Republicrats when I started in radio 15 years ago. And fundamentally, it's a shell game. Confidence in Congress at record low. On the right side of MichaelSavage.com, Bloomberg, the great Republican mayor of New York, is now campaigning for Obama, a Democrat, telling Jewish people in New York that Obama is not a Muslim. Well, Mr. Mayor, I beg to disagree with you. He may not identify as a Muslim, which I don't know why he wouldn't do, why he'd be ashamed of that. His own brother in Kenya says he is. I'll be right back. Savage. With oil and gas prices up to record highs and the oil-producing Middle East being less and less friendly towards us, many have said it's time to tap into our own oil supplies and help us start to get off of our addiction to Middle East castor oil. Representative Sue Myrick, Republican out of North Carolina, has written a bill that gets this ball rolling. Representative Myrick, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show again.
So tell us about your bill.
It's called the DOER Act, D-O-E-R. It's a Deep Ocean Energy Resources Act. Well, the bill is very simple. It just says that we will use our own resources instead of importing foreign oil from countries that don't like us, and we will drill off the coast on the outer continental shelf and give states the option of whether they want to do it or not. If they decide they do, then they will get a share of the profits. And that amounts to quite a bit of money for most states that would be understanding and open to doing it.
Well, how is it being received?
Very well. That's the thing that's interesting because, you know, we've done some of this in the past without success, but in my state of North Carolina, 68% of the people think it's a good idea, which is a real change. And then nationally, there was a poll done by Rasmussen that very simply said, I believe it was either 67 or 68% of the American people supported it. Even 60% of independents supported it, and only 18% of the people said no. And so, you know, that is pressure on Congress to get their act together and do something. And we've got to take a leadership role. The American people want action. They're tired of everyone talking about it. They're hurting.
Any notable opposition yet?
I haven't seen it yet, which is kind of interesting. The one thing that is interesting is we had an interior bill scheduled for markup yesterday, and one of the amendments was going to be my bill for drilling, and the markup was completely canceled. So that just simply seems to be because there's a divide up here between us and the majority on whether or not we're going to do anything to solve this crisis we're in.
Do you see this going through?
Well, that's the interesting part because I honestly think we've got a shot at getting this through. I know a lot of the other members who haven't been in support of this are getting deluged in their offices with calls and faxes and emails encouraging them to do this. And I think we'll see some action on it because they can only ignore the American people for so long. And I think there's a window of opportunity that we have never had before. And I encourage everybody, no matter where they live and who their rep is, to call or fax or email all of the representatives and senators and let them know if they think this is a good idea. Because if they get enough pressure from the American people, they will do something.
Well, will it pass the Senate if it passes the House?
It has to pass the Senate, and the Senate has to sign off on it. But I also know that the senators are getting tremendous pressure. There's lots and lots of calls coming into their offices, and I was told that it's possible they're looking at doing something, maybe before the House even does. So that's encouraging to me because they're recognizing the challenge. And, you know, this is just a part of what we need to do. My goal is to get us off foreign oil because we're financing both sides of the terrorists. Second part of it is we need to use our own natural resources so we're dependent on ourselves, And the third part, that buys us time to literally develop all of the alternatives that are out there, and there's about 10 of them that are very viable. So I'm encouraged by that. I'm a big supporter of hydrogen, by the way. And there's going to be a demonstration in California this summer with General Motors and Honda. They're going to be leasing, originally they had said about 300 cars. I'm not sure what the number will be totally, but they're building a hydrogen fueling highway, in other words, fueling stations along a highway in California, leasing these cars to prove that the concept really does work. So I'm encouraged because most of the alternatives are a lot further along than they've ever been. Now, they're still going to take some work, naturally, but we have a lot of alternatives that we can use to wean ourselves off of oil. You know, as someone said the other day, you can't fly a plane on wood chips, so you're still going to be using oil in some instances, and there are a lot of products, of course, that use it. But the point is, we won't be using as much in our vehicles in the future if everything goes as I hope it would.
How long would it take to see a difference?
This is not, you know, the fact that we would say, okay, we're going to pass this bill, it would not immediately lower prices. Nothing is going to immediately lower prices like that. But what it would do is two things. One, it would send the message that the process is starting, number one. It would send a message to the index speculators who are driving the market up now by being involved in the commodities future market, and they're not buying and selling like it was set up to do. They're just buying. And that amount of money has gone from something like $13 billion to $240 billion in just a very short period of time. And that's driving up the price of oil. So it would say to the speculators, hey, this is not going to stay here forever. You need to put your money someplace else, which is going to help to bring the price down. You know, Wall Street does operates on emotion. So, you know, I think it would do some stabilization. And then, you know, once we get a new supply, of course, we're going to see prices come down only because it's supply and demand. And we can't rely on the foreign sources forever because we're competing with China, India, the Mideast themselves are using their own oil. And, you know, these are people, a lot of them who don't like us, but a lot of them who are going to continue to grow. China's got a middle class of 350 million people that didn't even exist 5 years ago, and the same with India. They've got 300 million. They're buying cars, they're using energy, and that's going to continue.
Anything we can do to help?
Well, if your listeners would be willing to, again, and all this is available online, the phone numbers of the representatives, if they want to call, email's the easiest way. The email addresses are all available. And literally deluge the representatives and the senators with the fact that we want to see this happen. We want to get off foreign oil. We want to be using our own domestic supply for our own national security. And if enough people will do that, that message will get through loud and clear.
Representative Sue Myrick, thanks for being on the Savage Nation, and thanks for making a difference.
Well, I appreciate your willingness to help us get the word out on this. And if the American people will get behind it, it'll get done.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. We're back from the commercial break where the wonderful supporters of this program, advertisers like Swiss America, Direct Buy, make it possible for you to hear me and also possible for you to get great products to help you remodel your home and possibly for you to call them after you hear of a great interview such as this. You know, I've been saying for a long time how today's rap music is harmful. You heard me talk about it. I'm not the only one, of course. But it's harmful not only to today's young people, but to our culture as a whole. Rafael Turner was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, and was once part of this gangster hip-hop culture. He's an experienced Detroit police officer, former child social worker, man of the cloth, and he shed some light onto the ways that gangster culture has poisoned families, cultures, and societies in his new book, Rappin' Gangsters. Rafael Turner, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on the show.
What did you intend to achieve in writing this book?
I wrote the book because, you know, I wanted to make sure that I brought awareness to those who have not yet understood how detrimental gangster rap is and how it's affected our society in so many aspects.
How has it affected your community?
For over 20 years, the black community has been engulfed by gangster culture, which is coming right out of gangster rap music. I mean, many of the problems, such as violence, gun shootings, drug dealings, every kind of drug use that you can think of, from marijuana, cocaine, and what's becoming more and more popular, prescription drugs, has been rapped and linked directly to this vile music. I mean, domestic violence is increasing with our young teens. Adolescent promiscuity is getting crazy. I mean, to be honest with you, there are some in African-American community who have recognized these social ills growing within our young people. But unfortunately, there's still many who have not yet come to understand and realize how this music has affected a generation of young people. Now, this gangster rap, let me be clear, is not just music, but it's even been proclaimed by rappers themselves as a culture, a gangster culture. One that they're very proud of, and unfortunately, it's brought devastating consequences to young African Americans. And to be honest with you, it's affected our whole culture as a whole.
True.
This is a culture which replaces moral values and deposits demeaning values of its own. Now, this gangster culture has been very easy to recognize within my community. And that's how I began to notice that this same gangster, criminal, debasing culture was beginning to shape and mold the attitudes and norms of white kids as well. Not just black kids, but white kids, even as young as 6 years old. And after I thought about it, I was like, well, of course. This music has been targeted for whites for over 20 years, and its immoralities have finally taken root within white families. Now, for some whites, I mean, this is no surprise. They saw it coming. Being that 80% of all rap has been bought by white youth for more than 20 years. I mean, as a matter of fact, conservatives like Bob Dole, William Bennett, the former drug czar, the George Bush Sr., they tried to sound the alarms over 10 years ago, but many whites didn't take them serious. And here we are now in 2008, seeing cultural fallout, not just within black and Latin communities, but within white society as well.
Well, what do you think about the marketing of rap music?
Rap music is being marketed in so many different ways. I mean, of course, there's the drug issue. There's the sex issue. In this society, we have a problem with drugs. We have a problem with adolescent promiscuity. But it's being marketed to blacks. It's being marketed to whites as well. White youth are emanating this gangster culture that is cool to sell drugs. Some have even taken on the facade of gangsters by sagging their pants, showing the crack of their butts, and many of these white kids are developing the same be tough gangster persona that many of these gangster rappers are known to have. You know, I've talked to suburban and rural area teachers of kindergartens and first graders who've told me that they spend part of their day now refraining young white kids as young as six from calling girls bees and hoes. I mean, these kids are communicating the language of rappers. They're learning how to become thugs. This has opened up the door to bullying behaviors, other violence, and degrading girls at an early age. 50 Cent, Snoop Dogg, and Eminem, you know, they're becoming the American idols, and these kids are becoming more and more socially deviant.
Mm-hmm.
And corporate America, they're right in the middle of this. They're marketing gangster rap to whites. For years, the record industry, they've studied so-called black music, and they have found that when white musicians and singers perform black music, their pockets get fat. Success has proven this to be quite popular and profitable for both white artists and executives when white artists take the platform of black music. If you look at history, when black artists like Big Mama Thornton made You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog, Elvis Presley came out, he sang it, boom, sold over 4 million copies on his first release. Same thing with John Lennon when he did Roll Over Beethoven. And after Chuck Berry had already did it, the record industry knows that when you get somebody who's white singing black music, they're going to profit. They're going to make money. The boys in the back office, they know this. And they know with a white rapper flowing lyrics behind the mic, they stand to quadruple their profits, more than the money that's made from black rappers. You see, what's going on? Within the last 10 years, there's been a strong marketing push by record executives working with the entertainment industry to indoctrinate as many white youth as possible into this gangster lifestyle in order to get their paying dollars. But the suit and ties in the back office, they don't care about children being desensitized to violence. They don't care about them developing aggressive behavior or indulging in sex at 11 and 12 years old. They don't care if the kid is white, black, or brown. The only color they care about is that mean green dollar bill.
You say this type of music has a tie to organized crime?
That's right. You know what? For those who live in the hip-hop culture, it's no secret that many of the gangster rappers have started their careers off with drug money. I mean, while there were still drug dealers, while there were being drug dealers, these rappers have used money to pay for studio time in order to record CDs. And with that success, many went on to create their own independent record companies, you know, where they were able to handle distribution themselves. And after obtaining popularity and getting a name out there and pushing out major numbers of CDs, the major players of the record industry are able to see their potential growth. They see that they're good for marketing and that they're good, of course, for substantial profits, and then they sign them. Now, some of these independent labels owned by some of these rappers, they go on and they continue to sell drugs and they begin to launder their money through these companies. Law enforcement, from local police agencies to the feds, they're up on this. And they continue to try and penetrate these organizations all the time. Even with informants and even with evidence, it's been hard for law enforcement to sometimes get a conviction. In 2006, the rap label Murder Incorporated, owned by the Lorenzo brothers, a.k.a. the Gottis, well, they were found not guilty, even though the feds had evidence of them laundering more than $1 million for a convicted drug lord, Kenneth Supreme. And rappers like 50 Cent, Ja Rule, all have associations with this guy.
Are you kidding?
I'm telling you, it's crazy, and the public needs to know about this madness.
You also talk about how rap is tied into a possible race war.
Many people have suspected that some kind of incident will spark off a coming race war unlike anything we've ever seen in this country before. I mean, Everyday Joe Blow, the Klan, skinheads, white supremacists, the Nation of Islam, and the hip-hop culture is anticipating this catastrophic event. I mean, rappers have long warned and prepared hip-hoppers to be ready for a race war in which they believe and inform their listeners that it's almost inevitable. I mean, we got rappers like RBX, Paris, Immortal Technique, Ice Cube. They've all been very detailed in their lyrics. Some of them talking about killing whites at an appointed time, killing law enforcement officers, and coming against the devil, who they have identified as the white race. I mean, the white devil belief are the same ideologies believed by the Nation of Islam, Farrakhan's group, in which many of these rappers are associated with. And the Nation also believes that we're now entering the days of Armageddon, in which a race war is going to consume many right here in America.
No.
Now, you know, we're living at a time where race is on the forefront of society. And ever since Hurricane Katrina and incidents like Gina 6 and nooses popping up all over the country, it's been a mobilization of hip-hoppers who are basically saying, you know, bring it on. And the hip-hoppers believe that they're the next generation of civil rights advancers, and they've implied that they're taking by any means necessary to a whole nother level. They're not the youth of yesterday. And many feel that current civil rights leaders have got them as far as they're going to go, and many of them believe that America would only yield, respond, and comply with black youth of America when more aggressive means are being thrown in their face. You know, when you get rappers and they mix direct and subliminal racially charged lyrics for the purpose of inducing a future race war, intertwined with a society who is still struggling with issues of equality and justice, you generate a time bomb of millennium race fighters.
How is the military using this kind of music?
You know, let me tell you something. Music has always been instrumental within the military, especially during times of war, as far back as Korea and the Vietnam War. My research detailed a pattern which strongly suggested the United States military has been using gangster rap as a means to build up the aggressive psyches of combat soldiers. Filmmaker George Geddes, he did a documentary where he filmed American soldiers fighting over Iraq and how violent music like Tupac, Pastor Troy, 666 Mafia was being funneled through the headsets of M1 Abrams tanks and Black Hawk choppers. You know, I've talked to several soldiers myself who've indicated that the music seems to be very prevalent in all areas, not just in combat, but during R&R time and during child time. I've talked to soldiers who told me how they personally use gangster rap music to help incite themselves, get them hyped up in order to boost crazy courage before going on house raids. You know, it happens to be the same kinds of techniques I used sometimes when I was a police officer.
We're paying for live performances of gangster rap?
We've come a long way since the ballads of Bob Hope and Sammy Davis Jr. when they would perform for the troops. Now we got the military. They're using criminals like 50 Cent, Youngbloods, Pitbull, and Juvenile to perform for the troops. And the United States Department of Defense, they seem to enjoy all these lyrical images that are being embedded in the minds of our troops, being that they've funded celebrity entertainment with millions and millions of dollars. I mean, between 2000 and 2002, the Defense Department spent approximately $34 million. Now, I don't have a problem with entertainment. The troops, they need to be entertained to help provide a recreational outlet and help boost morale. But gangster rap, this is where I'm confused about. How are rappers like Juvenile, who's also performed for the troops, going to boost morale for troops when he performs songs which deliver messages about being a mad dog with no cure, squeezing the trigger of an automatic weapon until the clip is empty? Sounds to me that these are the same kinds of messages which are promoted in the hood and now frequently in the suburbs. And they have the same effect on soldiers, especially in combat. I don't think it's healthy for our soldiers to be having this kind of music injected into their ears or into their minds. Why is it that gangster rap music is allowed to play rampant in America's communities? I mean, the same gangster music that's causing drama overseas is psychologically and socially damaging our children right here in America. And that's based on the evidence of the chaos that's occurring in young culture in all our communities.
Raphael Turner, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
I appreciate you having me on the show. Thanks now. Bye-bye. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation rolling into the end of this hour. We've been talking about everything. Everything, everything, everything. What a heat wave we got. My God. I know you can't talk about the weather, but I do. To me, if it's real, it's real. Doesn't matter where you are. You can make it interesting. So it's not global warming. I know it's not record-setting, but it's murder. Wow. I'm an air conditioning nut. I know an awful lot about, like, what kind of systems I want and various properties and how to run them. So when my show's over, pow, Hannah, I go home, I'm watering. So I sent an email to the family. I said, I'm rushing to the house to water the plants, running the system a second time today because plants can die from heat shock, just as shock jocks can die from schlock jocks, i.e. radio executives. I mean, they call us shock jocks, no matter what our degrees are, what books we've written, no matter how brilliant we may or may not be. Oh, we're schlock jocks. Yeah. I mean, we're shock jocks, sure. And the politicians are geniuses. Well, if we're shock jocks, then the radio execs would be schlock jocks. You think they'd like to be called schlock jocks? I don't think so. They ought to stand up for us poor guys in the talk radio business. Anyway, the plants love the extra water. My dog is nuts when you run a hose. He runs under the hose. I mean, he's normally a sedate dog, Teddy. You run a hose, he goes crazy. Jumps. Dances on his rear feet, sticks his mouth. You know, you don't know what to do with him. He loves to get soaking wet, but then after it's over, when he dries, girls in Hollywood pay $2,000 for the hairdo, what it looks like. We call it a poofro on the poodle, what it looks like. It's really good. I mean, the curls come out. The hair is gorgeous. 1-800-449-8255. So Bush gives the Presidential Medal of Freedom today to Donna Shalala. It's unbelievable to me. That's the woman who would have been a bowling pill pin had it not been for fate. She became the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And as I said last week, at least we can say that Donna Shalala will finally get to be well hung when President Bush hangs the Presidential Medal of Freedom from her neck, which he did today. Unbelievable to me. Then Bush, of course, put the knife into McCain by asking Americans to vote for McCain. Listen to clip four.
You know, this election season is just beginning.
Beginning?
Real campaign.
Wait, let's stop right there. This election season is just beginning. Where has he been? It's been going on for 2 years. It's going to have been pretty hot for a while. It's just beginning. Okay, let's hear the rest of this.
Fall. And the American people will take the measure of the candidates running and their vision for the future. When they do, they're going to find some big differences between our parties.
Oh, yeah.
On issues that matter the most, from taxes and spending to confirming good judges and building a culture of life, to protecting our people and winning the war on terror, the American people will have a clear choice. And after the speeches and the debates, and when the American people focus on what matters to their future, they're going to send Republican candidates to the House, Republican candidates to the Senate, and John McCain to the White House.
That's it. Just what McCain ordered, just what the doctor ordered. Well, look, if it's a choice between Marx 2 and Bush 3, I think I'll have to take Bush 3 as opposed to Marx 2. You know, I already had Marx 101 in the Soviet Union. We don't need Marx 2 in the United States of America. So we're going to have – if it's going to be Bush 3, that's all. More NAFTA, more GATT, more WTO, amnesty for illegal aliens when everyone's heart is broken completely and finally, and the real McCain is seen for what he really is. More marriage between the parties. And as some wise woman once said, you can bet your last dollar on the following. Whenever the two parties are getting along, you can bet your last dollar that the American people are getting screwed. You see, a bipartisan government means that there should be a vigorous debate on every issue. They shouldn't be getting along. They shouldn't be getting along at all on issues such as the Iraq war. They should be fighting like cats and dogs so the American people can decide what's right and what's wrong. But they're not fighting over Iraq anymore, are they? They just passed the largest omnibus spending bill for the Iraq war in history. Why? It's good for business. They're not really fighting over energy. They're saying, you did it, you did it, you're in action. No, you did it, you did it. The reason they're not fighting over it is because the contributions from the Seven Sister Oil Companies are flowing like the oil to both parties. They're not fighting over issues such as the drug war, because there is no drug war. It's over. And I think the country lost. They're not fighting over issues such as the meltdown of our educational system, the attack upon the family, the attack upon the church. No, they're not arguing over that because they could care less. They'll leave that to the little people to fight over so they don't fight over the bigger things. No, so if it's a choice between Marx 2 or Bush 3, I guess we'll have to go with Bush 3. Because at the end of the day, are things really that bad? They're not really that bad. They could be better, but truthfully, are they that bad? They're not really that bad. There's a lot of hype about how bad things really are. Things are not really that bad. I'll tell you what bad is. Bad is the Great Depression when millions of people are standing online waiting for an apple. Bad is when millions of people are selling pencils in the street because there's no jobs and no public assistance. No, things are not that bad. I'll tell you when things are really bad, when we get there. Right now, things are not really that bad. A lot of it is media hype in order to elect Marx II. So again, as I say, if it's a choice between Marx II and Bush III, at this point, I got to go with Bush III because things are not really that bad. This is the Savage Nation, and things are not that bad. In fact, if things were worse, they'd be better. But since they're not worse, they don't have to get better. They're exactly fine the way they are. The show has never been bigger. The audience has never been more loyal. My website traffic is up to 2.5 million uniques a month or something like that, which means my listenership is up, no matter what the ratings say. So, things bad? No, they're not bad at all. I'll tell you what bad is. Bad is not being able to get a job at all. Bad is the fairness doctrine being pushed by communists in the American government in both parties who want a quiet talk radio. No, things are quite good. So at this point, I'll go for Bush 3 rather than Marx 2. This is the Savage Nation. Thank you for listening.